episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can become more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Cody Thompson, and this is a very special podcast, isn't it, Cody?
That's right. Yeah, we're not in a room by ourselves. We're here at the Unconference with 900 people.
Let's say hello.
And also Chris Jensen.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got Chris Jensen here and Tracy Noble and 875 friends and relatives at the Unconference. So what we're going to talk about today, what is it, Cody?
We're going to talk about a critical topic that we've been covering a little bit over these 2 days, but meetings. And you have written a book on meetings, Death by Meeting.
Death
it's
by
in
meeting.
The Advantage. But even in the last 2 years, you have put more emphasis on meetings than ever before and how critical they are in organizational health.
Right. And in fact, but a little inside information, that the book Death by Meeting was originally supposed to be called The Meeting That Didn't Suck,
right.
A fable. And we thought putting that didn't suck in a title might not be a good idea. So we changed it to Death by Meeting. And so we're going to talk about this because this is, and Chris, just before we came on, you said last night, we're here at this conference and there was consulting sessions.
Oh yeah, I was almost going to interrupt and just say, this is going to be relevant because last time it was a buzzing topic in the room next door where there was, you know, several hundred people coming for
people just want to talk about their meetings.
What's going on with meetings? What about one-on-ones? How do we help our lightning rounds? All these different things.
I had a guy came up last night as I was signing books that said, Pat, I knew there was a problem when I was falling asleep in my own meetings.
Exactly.
And this is one of those things.
Right.
It is.
And you've written two articles recently, one called Meetings Are the Linchpin of Organizational Health.
Right.
I've also heard you say that if you could go into a company and assess whether they were going to be successful
right.
in 10 minutes, and you got an opportunity to look at any part of the business.
I wouldn't at their data. I wouldn't look at their spreadsheets about their revenue. I'd go to their meetings and observe them,
how they
make decisions.
Why is that? What is it about meetings that shows you what?
Well, it kind of gets to the other thing people say is how would you evaluate? Because when I have a CEO or a leader of any organization or a division of a company or any kind of an organization, when they say, I really don't like meetings, I think, gosh, you know, a meeting is your playing field. If you were a quarterback,
right.
If I were going to say...
Which I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. Look like one, though.
That's right. I would say, I want to know if you're good. I want to go to your game and watch
right.
on the field.
Yeah.
If you were a teacher, a school teacher, I would go to a classroom and watch you teach.
Yeah, see how you interact with the
right.
kids.
If you were a surgeon, I'd want to see how you did in surgery, although I guess I wouldn't know how to evaluate that very well. But the point
seems
is...
pretty good.
That's
there's
your,
a lot of bleeding. Is everything okay
right,
in there?
Exactly. That's the playing field.
Right.
That's the platform. And if somebody said, well, what's the platform for a leader? It's meetings.
Right.
I mean, it's not giving a speech.
Right.
It's not ringing the bell on the New York Stock Exchange, you know, the things they put on TV. It's how do they actually interact with the people they're leading and how do they make decisions and use their most valuable resource in terms of time, which is the people.
That's right. And we get to work with all kinds of leaders in all types of organizations, and it doesn't matter whether it's a church or a school principal team or a big corporation or Fortune 500, everyone is concerned about their meetings. That's where things happen. And all the things we've been talking around, teamwork, behaviors, clarity, all happens in that 60-minute or 90-minute time each week where the leaders come together.
Go ahead.
They suck.
And
a lot of
horrible. Yes.
And so, and that's why it's so critical. And I think the reason we wanted to do a podcast around this is because there's so much to cover here.
Right.
It's almost difficult to, and meetings are, you think meetings are a boring topic, but so critical. But there's so much you can do to make your meetings better.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And why, so you've identified there's two reasons that meetings aren't
yeah,
good.
Yeah, two big ones. The first one is they're boring.
Right.
Anything that's boring is not effective.
Right.
Right.
I mean, I don't know, is there anything in life that, hey, that was really boring, that was perfect?
Right.
No. And I'm trying to think, you know.
No.
Okay, before we go off on some tangent that's not appropriate.
Right.
So boring is bad.
Boring's bad.
And then they're ineffective. We just don't get anything done.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but let's talk about boring first.
Yes.
Right, and we did do a short podcast on this earlier, but it's worth saying that if you don't tell people the stakes up front, if the meetings aren't interesting, it doesn't actually matter if they're slightly effective.
Right.
You have to have both.
Yeah. I was a screenwriter when I got out of college for fun.
Oh yeah, I love this.
And one of the things I learned in screenwriting, which was one of my favorite things, was that the most important part of a screenplay is the first 10 minutes.
Right.
And that's true in a movie. That's when people decide whether they like it or not, whether they're going to finish reading it or if they're going to enjoy the movie.
Yep.
And the first 10 minutes is the hook. And the key to the hook is conflict. It's like that you're like a little anxious because you're like, this is going to matter.
Right.
And I'm engaged. I'm anxious about what's going to happen. And I'm all bought in.
Yep. Right. And we talked about some movies that did this well. I mean, Bambi, her mom dies in the first part. Or is it a girl deer or a boy deer?
Bambi, I think, is a boy and it's the mom.
And right from the beginning, you're in. This is very relevant, right?
Yeah. Raiders of the Lost Ark has that first 10 minutes. I don't even know.
Okay, you mentioned movies, and this is one of the things I love that you say, is it's amazing that people will sit in a dark room, talk to nobody, and stare at a screen for 2 hours and leave and say, that was amazing. They'll go meet with their peers and talk about the most important thing they're doing every single day for a third of their life and say, I hope I never have to do that again.
Right.
Because a meeting isn't relevant. I mean, at the end of the movie, the movie isn't relevant. The end of the movie, it's like, well, my life is still the same.
Still the same.
Meeting is totally relevant.
Right.
I'm going to have to act on this.
And the decisions I make are going to impact other people outside of this room, and that matters.
And that's because we've allowed meetings to be bad. Meetings do suck, but not inherently.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We've allowed them to because we've just decided, well, it's corporate penance. We're just going to have to do this.
And you say conflict is part of the thing that makes it interesting. And we've talked a little bit about conflict, but to make it real, like that, when we have our meetings at our company, there is actually one of our favorite stories is we were vehemently disagreeing about something.
Now, it was summertime, so the windows were open.
The windows were open. And the property manager from the building came up, and they're like, is everything okay? Do we need to call the police? And we're like no, we're just arguing here. We have a decision.
We're having a meeting.
Right, exactly.
You sound so heated.
Yeah.
Right. I think
it was mostly Tracy.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, Tracy, yeah. But the tension is an important part of a meeting not being boring. And so even though we talk about conflict and help us make better decisions, as a leader, the tension and the energy in the room is a sign people care. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. You know what's interesting? I never thought about it this way, but the tension you have in a meeting allows the work not to be as tense. But when you don't have tension in a meeting, you make the tension go out into the hallways.
They have to deal with all the tension.
Right.
That's so true.
So that's when you get together to do that.
Right.
And so we're supposed to have, and we also, when people come to our office, we let them come to our staff meetings. I think it's like a learning experience for them, and we don't change. No. And so tell us about
So we were having a meeting. We had a guest in a couple weeks ago, and Lynn, who is in the back here, her and I were disagreeing in the meeting like with a guest present. It was just acting like any other meeting that we've had. And we cycled through the conflict and made some decisions, and then Pat went out with our guest, and our guest turned to Pat and said, are you going to have to clean that up? You know, like, and really what it is every company we've gone to, I mean, you said this yesterday, no one is really in danger of having too much conflict. Most companies don't have nearly enough conflict.
Right.
And when I even remember my first meeting at the table group, I thought I was going to get whiplash because I'm used to meetings where someone's in the front presenting with a PowerPoint from previous jobs. And then I got to our meetings and I had to keep looking about who was talking around the table. And so there is definitely something to, if you set the stakes and you say, here's why this matters, that we have good discussion, and then the stakes are there. I mean, I was thinking about Alan Mulally yesterday.
Yeah.
Do you think that any of those meetings that he was at Ford, he didn't start with, hey, so we're hemorrhaging $17 billion. So what we do here actually matters. Now let's get into it and see how our business is functioning.
Right.
So meetings are critical. If anybody has any doubts of that, and the people in this room probably don't, but some people are like, I just need to have fewer of them. I need to make them shorter.
Right.
And neither of those is the right answer.
And the thing that helps overcome the boring factor actually also improves
the effectiveness.
Right. They go together. Yeah. They go together. Well, let's talk now about
effectiveness
in meetings.
Yep.
And the biggest problem in meetings, and this isn't sexy, but is just that we're trying to do too many things at once. The human brain just can't process different things. We can't jump around from strategy to tactics to futures to past to decision making to brainstorm, whatever else.
Right.
And I call that meeting stew, because that's where you take every ingredient out of the cupboard and you pour it into one pot and stir it together, which is your weekly staff meeting.
Right.
And you wonder why it tastes so bad.
Exactly.
And sometimes people have a hard time understanding meetings too until I use the example of my home life.
Yeah, I love this. Yeah, go ahead.
And I'm so glad my wife.
I have five kids. I don't relate to this story at all.
Exactly. So my wife, Laura, who was here at the conference yesterday. So I call meetings to her and I in the bathroom in the morning, brushing our teeth. Just do different sinks. You know, we have two sinks. And we're like trying to cover everything in that one meeting in the bathroom. And I'm like, so who's picking up the kids from school? Do you think we need to get counseling for one of our sons? Should we have another baby? What's for dinner tonight?
Where should we go on vacation?
We throw all those things out there. The next day I come home and she says, I'm pregnant. And I'm like, I thought we were having chicken.
Right, exactly.
Did we make a decision on that? You know?
Exactly.
The point is, no human beings are meant to take on all those topics at once. There's different contexts for different things.
We have to be able to categorize different types of meetings.
Yep. But we don't.
We don't.
We don't do it at home. We don't do it at work. We have one meeting.
Yeah.
We go, it's going to suck, so let's just throw everything in that meeting, get through it, and be glad it's over.
That's right.
And at the end of the meeting, people are like, did we decide anything? Not really.
Right.
What about that big hairy issue? No, we didn't do that. What about these tactical issues? Oh, yeah, I guess we kind of got through them. But we ran time off the clock, and we're done.
That's right.
Yeah. And we have to stop that. And the truth of the matter is, we need to be having, and this is the thing that makes people's heads spin, we need to be having four different kinds of meetings.
Right, and when people hear this, when they read your book and they see four different types of meetings, and I'll be in the room with the executive team and the CEO, and they're thinking, we already have too many meetings,
right, and
you want us to do more?
And they are having too many meetings, because they're not having the right kind up front, which makes them have to have a bunch of meetings to catch
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there's four kinds of meetings. We'll go through. Yeah. Let's go through those, Cody.
You want me to do it?
Yeah.
So the headline news meeting, the daily check-in. That's what
5 minutes.
You call it in your book. 5 minutes. Stand up. Nobody sits down. We all say what we're working on, and that's mostly. I think the one nuance around that is it's not about saying what is going to make you busy that day. The purpose of that meeting is to know what your colleagues are working on, so that if there is a more important priority, you can cancel something for someone and realign their time that day.
Right.
So it's not a list of things like, oh, let me tell you how busy I am today. It's just,
are
we all lined up?
Right. And sometimes you just get together and go, hey, did you watch the game last night? Oh, yeah. Hey, where's Chris? Well, he's not here today. Oh, he's in Detroit. Oh, good to know. Okay, did you submit those forms? Good. It's just you take care of a bunch of, in technology, they say you flush the cache. So you start fresh.
That's right. That's right.
And when the clock hits 5 minutes and 1 second, you should leave.
Yep.
And there should be no donuts, no sitting down, certainly no agendas. It's just there's something about human beings that work together.
Yep.
Checking in with each other.
In fact, you know you're doing too much in that meeting when it goes beyond 5 minutes. I mean, it's probably one of those other topics is creeping into that meeting.
Yeah, that's right.
You should,
Now, this is the least important of the four.
Right.
So, but if you can do it, if you're co-located,
certainly do it.
Absolutely. 5 minutes a day is worth it.
Second one we call the weekly tactical meeting, and that's the one that we're going to dive into the most here because this is what everyone kind of refers to as their staff meeting. So typically like the 60 to 90 minute window, they all happen on Mondays. When you pull into the parking lot, you dread doing that unless you work at the table group, of course, right, Pat?
Because we love
we love every meeting,
We do. That's our favorite day of the week.
We do, actually.
It is. And so the third one is ad hoc strategic meeting. And really what that's for is that's for when something comes up in your weekly tactical meeting that you can't solve in that window that is not a tactical thing, it's more of a strategy thing.
It's a big hairy issue.
We have a parking lot of strategic topics that we need to pull the right people into a room and spend 2 or 3 hours.
And by the way, that is the most fun we have in business.
That's right.
Yes.
That when people go to business school or when they decide to get a job in business, this is what they're thinking about. How are we going to solve these big issues?
Right.
We're going to go into a room, we're going to get some beer and some pizza and a whiteboard, and we're going to argue, and we're going to brainstorm, we're going to figure this out, and we're not leaving until we get it done.
Right.
And then we don't ever have those meetings because we have those conversations in 15-minute increments during our weekly meeting.
Weekly meetings, that's right.
And there's something about one meeting, one topic, let's talk about it. And we've been experimenting with this 20-minute version of it. Most of them are longer issues, but the idea of like, let's just get into a room, let's talk about this one issue.
That's right.
Wrestle it to the ground.
And we're going to go into more detail because when we dive into the weekly tactical meeting, what tends to happen is that those big topics get brought up there, and you can kind of tell by the nature of the conversation that that's not a tactical thing, and we need to put that on the side and really reschedule another meeting for that.
Right. Those are the most fun, though. I mean, a strategic meeting, one topic, is so fun to go in and use your talent and argue and solve the problem.
That's right.
Exactly.
So the last one I'll cover briefly is just the quarterly offsite meeting. This is something that we do at the Table Group, we advocate for everyone to do once a quarter, or at least twice a year, to step back from your business, bring your whole team, do some team building. We still, after, you know, you guys have worked together for 20 years, I've been there the last 5 years, still build trust at these meetings, still try to take back and really invest in our team. But then to take a step back and kind of look at our business and make sure that we're focused on the right things, that our energy and attention and resources are all focused on the right things, so that we can dive back into the business and go fast. It's slowing down to go fast.
So we don't want to bore people with the fact that there's four different kinds, but there's different contexts.
Right.
It's just like my wife and I in the bathroom. There's the check-in. That's where I should say, who's picking Connor up from school today? What are we having for dinner? That's about it.
Right.
And then there's the go to the end, the quarterly review. That's where she and I should go away to Napa, because it's only a half hour from our house, and say, how are we doing as a family? How are you doing? Of course, we don't do that enough.
Right, no.
So those are the extremes.
And then the baby conversation is the strategic one, right?
Like, yes, very strategic, very strategic.
Did we have a baby?
Yes.
Which
let's get
we
some
pizza
beer and whiteboard this out.
Yeah.
We have another baby.
We didn't have that until after baby number 5. And I was like, babe, we should actually talk about this before we have another one.
But let's today talk about the most frequent in terms of like the meeting you have where you get your team together once a week, probably.
And if you're going to start, you're going to start with this meeting.
Yeah, this is the one you got to fix first.
Yeah,
that's right.
So we just want to contextualize that so people don't go, what about those topics? What about those? That's all planned for, but this is the most important one. How are you going to run your business?
That's right. So there are some elements here. And
let's talk about what it should never be.
Okay, great.
You should never sit in a meeting and be thinking, why am I listening to this presentation? This is a complete waste of time.
Right.
And the model we proposed with our clients and in the things we write, that will never happen again.
That's right.
And that's when people go, now I'm listening.
Yeah, we're no longer presenting to each other.
No, because how many of us, and show of hands in here, how many people have sat and watched a PowerPoint presentation and thought, you are wasting my time and everybody else's and nobody's interested in this? Yeah.
So for those listening, that was everybody.
That was they all raised both hands. It was 1,800 people.
Right.
And the point is, the reason why that happens is because of this horrible word that everybody thinks you're supposed to have before you start a meeting. And that's an agenda. Did you suck through your teeth?
Hi.
I was wondering. And people are like, what do you mean you have to have an agenda? No, an agenda is somebody's best guess at what we should talk about at the meeting tomorrow.
Right.
Before we even get in a room and figure out what the heck is going on.
This is really difficult for people to embrace this idea that we're going to go into a meeting and not have predetermined what we're going to do.
Right.
Difficult.
Right.
That's right. And the thing is, I can't imagine, you know, if I had emailed Pat Sunday night and said, hey, Pat, I have this PowerPoint slide I'd like to show at our Monday meeting. I mean, that would not go well, okay? He would say, of course that's not. How do we know that it's the most important thing that we should be talking about before we take a look at our dashboard, look at all the things we're trying to accomplish, and assign red, yellow, and greens, and then go, now let's talk about the most critical items.
Yeah. Right. So for those people that freak out too much, I go, no, it's okay. We'll still have an agenda. We're just going to create it when we arrive.
Right.
We are never going to do it until everybody sits down around the table and we go, what's actually happening? And let's make sure that we don't talk about anything that we can't all agree is really important to talk about.
Right. That's right.
And so what we say is you will never sit through another presentation at a staff meeting where you are bored or where it's not relevant.
So actually, this is important. Walk us through the mechanics of how do we know what the most important thing is for us to spend the next 45 minutes talking about? How do we do that?
Well, and so how do we figure this out, say this? So we talked to you yesterday about having a rallying cry.
Yeah.
The first thing you do is you start by going, okay, our rallying cry, here's the one thing that matters most.
Yeah.
And everybody looks at that and goes, yep, that's it. Now here's the 4 or 5 things that we have to do to make that work. We call it defining objectives.
That's right.
And that's where we do like what Alan talked about, we put a color on it.
Right.
This is one of my favorite parts of our meetings. Is we go around the room and we go, okay, the first thing. Like, I mean, gosh, what would this be? In my family, I'm going to use a family example.
Okay, great.
Because, and when I work with executive teams, sometimes I give them the family example, and that's when it clicks. Because so in my family, 14 years ago, my wife and I found out we were having our 4th child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So our thematic goal would have been prepare for baby number 4, because we were already drowning with 3.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, yay, thank you, God. What are we going to do?
Cody should start taking notes.
Yeah, we have our second on the way, so let me get a pen here.
So the thematic goal would be prepare for baby number 4.
Right.
Well, what are you going to do? Make a sign in the bathroom and put a t-shirt? No, that's stupid. It's like, what would that mean? So we came up with five things. We said we have to, our twin boys who are seven have to become more self-sustaining. They have to make their own lunch and get their homework done and get to school on time. Our three-year-old has to get out of our bed and out of his diapers. Your life is over, Casey. You're out of here. Yeah, there's another one coming. We had to discipline up our three-year-old.
Yep.
We had to clear out the garage. We had to finish the kitchen remodeling. We had to outsource some things that we were doing that we didn't have time for.
Right.
So there were five things: the twins, the three-year-old, the garage, the kitchen, and the outsourcing.
Outsourcing.
Those were our five defining objectives.
Yep.
So if we were an executive team, we'd sit down and go, okay, let's have this meeting. Baby number four, we got to get ready. Let's go through each of these areas. How are the twins doing?
And you red, yellow, or green, right?
Right. Yep. Red, yellow, green. And I go, I don't know. I think it's pretty red. I mean, they're in bed right now and they're not going to school. So we're in trouble there. Casey, he's doing well. You know, he's a green, and, you know, and an executive team does this. They go through the five big areas. And one of the most interesting things is watching them figure out what the color is.
Right.
And going, so how is that new marketing program going? And somebody says, I think it's green. And somebody goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. Did you hear about this thing? No, I didn't. What about it? Oh yeah, you're right. It's yellow.
Right.
And that, it takes 10 or 15 minutes at the beginning of the meeting. That might be the most important thing that happens.
Right.
Oh, okay. One of the questions that came out last night in the consulting corner was, what if we don't have enough data to understand if it's red, yellow, or green?
Yeah.
And that's why I actually love the family example, because if you ask, how are the twins doing, and you think that there's a metric that's going to give you a red, yellow,
exactly,
or green,
exactly.
Like, what is that metric exactly?
Well, let's see here.
They submitted their reports. You know?
And that's the thing. People think that it's about data. It's about judgment.
Right.
And this is one of the myths, and people all know this in their own business, but they think all the world-class businesses are different. Southwest does not make decisions based on data.
Right.
I mean, they use data, but I've been in a room when the executives made decisions. And it's judgment.
Right.
They sit there and they go, okay, we know the data, but what should we do?
That's right.
You know?
And I love what Alan said yesterday. CEO, Ford Motor Company, global organization, and he's got his executives around a team saying, is it red, yellow, or green?
Exactly.
And when they disagree, why don't you two get together and figure it out, and let's talk about it.
Right. And the purpose of the color is not to be specific and accurate. The purpose of the color is to give you a sense of whether that should be relatively important to talk about that day.
Exactly.
Because people go, I don't know if it's green or if it's yellow. And I call it lime, let's move on.
Right, and because the goal is not to present the data and present the case for whether it's green or yellow. We're in the process of creating our agenda right now.
Exactly.
So what we do is we go, oh, we take a step back after we have everything colored, and we say, what are the most, we don't put a time limit on it, but if we have 60 minutes together as a team, which are the ones that we should cover? The thing is, covering ones that are green when your time is so precious, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right,
you know, you just
right.
do a lot of reporting out about how great I did at the thing that I was doing that you guys, I should tell you guys about, versus this is really critical.
Let's focus our time on the two or three or maybe four most important issues.
Well, and this is where we should go back to bad meetings. Here's how they often happen. The CEO or the leader sits there and essentially does a collective one-on-one with everybody in the room. They go, let me talk about your area for 15
right.
minutes. Let me talk about your area for 15 minutes. Let me talk about yours. Yours could be doing fine. This one's is on fire. It's terrible.
Right.
This one's fine. And we peanut butter out our time equally, where the whole team would rather go, let's all dive in and help this guy or this gal on the thing that's really holding
spend
us back.
Spend the whole 60 minutes on that.
Exactly.
Right.
And yet, so we somehow we think having an agenda, peanut buttering out our time, filling out the minutes and sending them people so that which they'll never read, that makes for a good meeting.
Right.
What we need to do is go put colors on that stuff and then go, what's red or orange or yellow that we need to talk about today?
Right.
And that's what we're going to do.
Exactly.
And most of the time, those are still, the things that come out of that meeting are still tactical topics that you take on. We have a consultant who told me a story about one of the clients. They were really struggling with, are we solving tactical things in this meeting or are we bleeding into strategic topics? They did this really simple thing. I love when there's like stories where they just do really simple stuff to help them differentiate.
Who did this?
I think it was Brad, but I'm not sure. You can tell me if I was wrong later. But they have a bell on the table when they're talking about their topics, and if they're on one topic and it gets past 5 minutes, someone just rings the bell. Now that doesn't mean move on, it just means, hey, let's decide, is this really a tactical thing or is this bleeding into a strategic thing? So if it is, let's table it and get the right people in the room. Something that simple can
That would be like a bell in my bathroom, me going to my wife, hey, do you think we should have another baby? And she goes, ding,
yeah.
We are not talking about that right now. You know, like, okay.
Exactly.
I love that because I think you said this earlier, the meeting stew thing. What happens in a conversation is we start talking about something we think is tactical, and all of a sudden we uncover it's actually more of a strategic issue. And we just keep going.
And we need to go, stop. That's way too big for this meeting.
Exactly.
Yep.
Right.
So we get through all the colors. We've addressed what's a so we're creating our agenda. We're moving some things from a tactical meeting to a parking lot where we're going to have another meeting. And then we've assigned red, yellow, and green for everything. And then we start our meeting.
That's when the meeting starts. So you spend 15 minutes up front reviewing what's going on, putting colors around it. And that 15 minutes makes the next 45 or 75 minutes so much more valuable.
Right.
That's right.
What I loved, so Pat and I were at a client not too long ago in the Silicon Valley.
Multiple billion dollar company, huge company.
With the CEO and two or three direct reports, and and organically one of their meetings came up. It was a monthly meeting that they fly in some heads of different parts of their business all over the world.
Strategic meeting?
No, we were just talking to them about organization.
Just a meeting.
Okay. Just a meeting, okay.
It takes a day.
Yeah,
it takes a whole day.
Okay. And the CEO just goes, oh, I hate that meeting. And then every one of the direct reports was like, oh, that meeting's the worst. We were going to email you about how bad it was.
Oh, my God.
And we're sitting there going,
why do you have that meeting?
You guys are in charge, you know.
Just
you can cancel it. And they were like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if we can cancel it.
We've been doing this forever.
And you know what happened? They canceled it. And then Jeff went back 2 weeks later, and they were having it again.
Oh, my God.
And I hope they don't listen to this podcast.
No. But the reason why is because we get used to it. Like, well, we've always had that. You know, there's this great thing called the Abilene Paradox. Is that what it's called? The trip to Abilene. And I don't know who came up with it. It was a business thinker years and years ago. He talked about some people sitting around in West Texas.
Yeah.
Here in Texas. And it was a really hot summer day. This is like in the 50s. There's no air conditioning. Mm-hmm. And everybody's sitting around going, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? There's these four people. And somebody goes, do you want to go to Abilene? Yeah, we can go to Abilene. All right, let's go to Abilene. They get in the car. There's no air conditioning.
Right.
They're dying. And somebody goes, Why are we going to Abilene? I thought you wanted to go to Abilene. No, I thought you wanted to go to Abilene.
Yeah, exactly.
Who wanted to go to Abilene? We have meetings that nobody wants to be at.
Right.
And we keep doing them. And we go, why? Because we've always done it this way.
Right.
And we're like, be a hero. Cancel that meeting.
Cancel that meeting. Right. Yeah. Be everyone's best friend.
Right. And you're the leader. You're allowed to.
So one, there's a client here that many years ago was struggling with this whole idea. And they had this one big meeting they couldn't get rid of. And I said, you know what? Just do it. But just start working on this tactical meeting. And within 3 months, they got to that other meeting and they said, why are we doing this anymore?
Right,
it's not
right,
relevant. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's, if you're stuck, just start doing the right thing and some of this other stuff will sort itself out.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite things is when people work with us and they say, meetings used to be my least favorite thing. Yeah. Now they're my favorite because I think that's where we get the most done.
That's right.
They're not boring. They're effective. And people really come there ready to talk.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the last thing we'll do is we'll talk about how we end our meetings because we don't have a time slot.
And you should always schedule extra time so that if it keeps going because it needs to, you can keep going.
Right. But really, the meeting ends when you're done talking about what is most important.
Right.
Yeah. So be a hero and leave early if it's over. Or stay late if you're still into a topic that matters.
Yeah.
Right. All right, we're going to take some questions.
That's right. We have some questions.
Tracy, our producer, you have some questions we've solicited from this live audience.
Exactly. I actually have both of them up here on the couch with me. So I'm going to start with Andrew. Andrew has a great question for you.
So a lot of companies are asking employees to work from home due to the coronavirus thing. And I'm curious, I'm assuming there's lots of teams that are already using this model with remote and virtual teams. So how do you do it and what role should technology play in that?
Great question. You can definitely have remote meetings. I mean, that's a good use of technology. But if you haven't built trust and personal relationships with people when you are together, some people say, oh, we have a virtual team. So-and-so's in Switzerland, somebody's in Japan. So really, how much time do you spend together? Oh, we've never spent any time together. We don't know each other hardly at all. That's not really gonna be a team. When you do get together, if that team has strong relationships, then you can use that technology and have a really effective meeting. Because you're building upon the trust level you already have.
That's right.
So basically my answer is, if you have trust and you've been having meetings and now you're, for whatever reason, you're doing it virtually, it'll be 95% successful.
Yeah.
But so many teams that are virtual that don't really take the time to build relationships are only getting a fraction out of that. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think in terms of technology, leverage leverage the fact that we have video technology before just using text and typing and that sort of thing. And I mean, we have Jackie.
We have robot Jackie. In the
robot office. Jackie comes iPad. In on an iPad.
Yeah. We have our first
virtual.
Jackie got married, moved to Carmel Valley, which is 2 hours from our office. So we went out and bought a little stand and put an iPad in it just for Jackie and to turn it on. And because we have a great relationship with her, when she's in the meetings, it's real.
And we want to see her face. We want to talk to her. We want her to be able to see us.
Yeah.
That's an important part of
it. But the last thing I'll say is you wrote an article that got a lot, it was like kind of on the internet, it got a lot of buzz because it was a little controversial. You said virtual teams are worse than I thought was the title. And really the essence behind that was you have to understand that you're at a disadvantage if you're a virtual team. So you have to be way more intentional about having better meetings. It will be harder for you, but not impossible. But the amount of soliciting people's feedback and mining for conflict just ramps up when you're not in the same room.
And the video actually does help, mainly because it makes somebody realize they can see me. Because have you ever been on a conference call? I mean, I've done a lot of things on a conference call during a meeting.
Oh.
I mean, I know I've cut my toenails during conference calls before. I wouldn't do that. Well, I might do it, but I probably wouldn't do it on video, you know? I mean, no. You know, I've played a lot of Spider Solitary on conference calls too, but.
Jeff Gibson and I, the president of consulting, we were listening in on a meeting and we were on conference and I kept hitting mute, screaming at the phone the whole time and then unmute going, oh, okay, that's great.
So yes, you can build that trust. Another question.
All right, we've got Jamie from Boston here.
Hi, first off, thank you for your wisdom. It's been transformational for the organization that I'm part of. My question is, in our tactical meetings, we get stuck on spending too much time assessing our defining objectives and our standard operating objectives, twice as long as what you're talking about. As
far putting colors on them?
Yeah, everybody wants to get into describing what's going on and that defining objective rather than getting right to the point. So how can we do that more efficiently in a way that we can spend more time on the agenda talking about the issues that are important? Thank you.
It's a great question.
Go ahead.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, make sure you talk about the leader's role on this.
Well, I was just going to say, are you the leader?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So Jamie, this is your fault.
Take a bow.
No, one of the things I realized, so many things that leaders have to do, like in the moment are kind of uncomfortable, but in the larger span, people are like, thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
And sometimes in a meeting, you just have to go, that's enough. It's yellow. Next one.
Right.
And though people go, well, I don't think, it's like, no, we're just moving along. And at the end, they're going to go, thanks for doing that. Right. I know you did it to me, but we were getting too much in the weeds. So your job is to keep it like, no, the reason we're doing this is just so we can get a relative sense of what's going on. So don't make the perfect the enemy of the good. One of the most important things that leaders have to do. Just say, good enough, we know where it is.
Right.
And if your team doesn't follow you down that, it's to your point earlier that this is the best assessment of a leader, because that's probably an indicator to what you just said, that trust probably needs to be built more in your team. The team needs to have more clarity on what we're focused on and be more bought into it. Because in a great team with high trust, you can say, all right, Chris, we're good.
Right.
And I can follow that lead.
Right.
I think sometimes the other thing that makes this take longer than it should is that people rely too heavily on the metric to decide. And so that they're trying to decide is like, is that good or bad? And it might be helpful that like every week we put a red, yellow, or green on book sales, you know, so Pat sells books. And if we don't actually if you don't know, he's written some books. We use the metric to inform the color, but it's not the thing that decides the color. Because what's really interesting is like in December, we might sell 1,000 less or you know, 10% less books or whatever it is. And just because it's down, you have to use your qualitative understanding of like, well, all book sales are down. Not just because it's down, we put it in red, because then we end up talking about something that actually is going to rectify itself the next month. We just have to use our intuition to go, that's the metric is not the driver of the color on that.
That's right.
Very good. I think that's the thing. Be the leader just to keep pushing it forward. Any other questions? Those were our two questions, Trace?
We actually had another one. I wasn't able to find Gil, but Gil basically asked, were you serious when you said that we should minimize our one-on-ones? And if so, how do we coach our people and give them feedback during the meetings?
Oh, I like this question, because essentially what this is a corollary, or actually the same question to, should you be giving people feedback during meetings in front of everybody else? Yeah.
This came up in the coaching corner. We had a really great talk on this.
And I think, you know, there's this old saying that says, praise publicly, criticize privately. And I don't think that's true. I think that if you have a good team, If you've got some constructive criticism for somebody, give it to them with everybody else there for two reasons.
Okay.
Now, that's assuming there's trust on the team and that they're a member in good standing. But if I see Chris during a meeting doing something that I don't think is productive, there's actually something good about me going, hey, Chris, don't do that during the meeting. Mm-hmm. And he goes, everybody else goes, oh, so he knows that Chris does that. We thought that was annoying too. We're glad you told him. We're not going to do it now because you just told us.
Right.
So that's helpful. If I do it offline, these people are like, does he hold Chris accountable? They don't get to benefit from the fact that they saw me do that.
They saw you do it.
But now, if I think Chris, if I'm starting to question whether or not he's should be a member of the team, so now it's becoming, what do you call it, corrective situation.
Right.
That's where, for his dignity, I need to do that one-on-one.
Right.
But here's the irony. I still have to let the other people on the team know that I'm working on that, because I don't want them thinking you as the leader aren't holding people accountable. So I'm doing it for his dignity. But when... most times, it's better to hold people accountable as a team. Mm-hmm. And it makes meetings pretty interesting.
Well, the other benefit is not just for them, but it's for the person receiving feedback. Because we all know when we have our unproductive behaviors, and we don't like it to be exposed. And so, but when you know your team all knows, everybody knows, you know, the thing that I'm struggling with is in everybody's awareness, and they're going to help me with it, I actually feel safer. My trust in the team is much higher.
You know, and so let's use an example. Let's say we're at a meeting. This could definitely happen at our company. And you see somebody who seems kind of distracted. They're looking at something, whether it's their phone or something else.
No one ever does that in meetings.
I know. It's a hypothetical.
Yeah.
And you go, excuse me, Michael, is there something going on here? It looks like you're distracted. And it's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And he's either going to go, yeah, I'm sorry, I'll put this away. Or actually, I am distracted. There's this thing going on. And it might be my wife is sick, or I'm kind of worrying about this thing. And we'll go, oh, tell us about it. And then we'll help you with that. And then we'll get back on track.
Right.
Not doing that, everybody else notices he's not paying attention. And then after the meeting, if I go talk to him privately, suddenly everybody else is going to go, well, he did it during the meeting. I can do it next time too.
Yeah.
It sounds so silly, but if you're a good leader, you have to be willing to have that uncomfortable conversation right there. And good things happen. Now, I'm not going to be a jerk about it.
Right.
Well, I hope not. I'm sure I have been before.
Right. But, so you were serious about minimizing one-on-ones.
Definitely. One-on-ones should be about your development.
Yeah.
So once a month, I should have a one-on-one and say, okay, Cody, we're not going to talk about the tactics of your work, because I've been talking to you about that in meetings with the whole team. How are you? Mm-hmm. What's going on? What do you think you're doing? How am I doing for you? Maybe, if anything, it's a chance for them to be a little more comfortable asking you questions.
Exactly.
Although you want that to happen on a team, too.
Exactly.
Great. Thank you to Gil for that question. And I think that's going to bring our podcast to an end.
Let's wrap it up.
So we want to thank everybody that's out there listening to this. We want to thank everybody in our live audience. And we want to say God bless you all. All right.